Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hi, I'm Mike Dilk, and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family, and your friends. Each week, I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thanks for joining me on the Relax Back UK show. The topic this week is one of trust. That is trust in the NHS. My guest is Emma Doughty. She's a lawyer from the Medical Negligence Department at Slater and Gordon Lawyers.
I mean, I think the NHS is brilliant at acute care. I mean, there can be no question of that, you know. So I think if there's something that they think is kind of life-threatening or could possibly be life-threatening, they are absolutely fantastic.
She thinks the world of the NHS in some situations, but maybe not so much in others.
But I think there's a majority of people in this country who aren't being served properly by their GPs, or in fact, perhaps are just being affected by previous experiences and actually behaving, you know, in a way that sort of results from those experiences, which is not necessarily beneficial to their health.
This really is a fascinating chat. I love the NHS. It has saved my life, saved my wife's life. Whatever you think of it and wherever you put your trust, please do stay tuned to this fascinating discussion. My first question to Emma Doughty of the Medical Negligence Department at Slater and Gordon Lawyers was actually a detail about their press release.
Your press release, it talks about 35% of people avoiding contacting their GP because they feel, well, I guess it'll take such a long time to get an appointment. So I saw that and I thought, goodness me, is that really true? Is that really true? Where did that come from?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is what the research is showing us. And this is the culmination of a couple of years worth of research. And actually, the figures seem to be getting worse. And I think it's just people take, it's so much time for people to actually get an appointment to that point that they've sort of decided to go their own route. And what our research is also showing is that one in five are doing their own Google research to try and self-diagnose.
Yeah, we were going to chat on this subject. So I did a little bit of sort of Googling, which I understand is a very dangerous thing to do, particularly when it comes to kind of health topics. But I found a report by Nuffield Trust Report, and it was quoting NHS Digital. It's from a while ago. It's May 2023. And it said 43.9% of appointments with GPs took place the day they were booked, you know, the same day they were booked. So that was 12 million appointments booked and delivered the same day in that month. Wow. And that struck me as pretty good, actually. Those figures, do they sound compatible to you? They don't necessarily to me.
They don't really know. And would Nuffield, would that be private GPs? Because obviously there is an element of, you know, a lot of people are now just utilising their own private healthcare to get GP appointments. So I'm wondering whether that's well, what that might relate this to.
They did refer to NHS Digital. So it might be that it's all GPs, public and private. But I think it does include the NHS.
I wonder whether that also includes, because I'm sure you've experienced this yourself, but with the GPs, a lot of them have sort of various online opportunities. And, you know, this is a very sort of personal view now that I'm sharing. I'm not sure those are always the best way of people getting to the right person or having all of their symptoms diagnosed. I mean, you know, there's sort of various online systems where you can upload a terrible photo of whatever it is that you're concerned about or whatever. So I wonder whether it also includes that. But no, the general answer to your question is that it doesn't really chime with what we've been hearing.
Well, so I thought, all right, let's try a little bit of personal experience, because About a month ago, I was unfortunate enough to fall off a ladder. I was building a greenhouse. That's another story. Anyway, I fell off my ladder, and I bruised my shin quite badly. And a few days later, the bump wasn't going down. So I thought, right, let's get hold of the doctor. And I must admit, I thought, all right, here we go. This is going to be awful. But I had a phone call that same day, and they said, right, you better come in tomorrow. So off I trotted, and it was all very quick and efficient. Now, I'm sure there's an element of postcode to all this, but my personal experience with an N of one about a month ago was, goodness, this is rather good.
I mean, I think the NHS is brilliant at acute care. I mean, there can be no question of that, you know. So I think if there's something that they think is kind of life-threatening or could possibly be life-threatening, they are absolutely fantastic. But I think what we're sort of concerned about is those people who sort of, you know, might have sort of fairly generic, vague symptoms, and they're sort of putting off going to see their GP because they feel that they, you know, either won't get listened to, or because they feel that, you know, it will be a couple of weeks wait. So, you know, for example, my GP surgery, unless your, you know, leg's about to fall off, you pretty much have to wait 2 weeks for an appointment. And that involves you calling at 8 a.m. and sitting in a queue until about 9:15. Or having to sort of jump online at 8 and try and get these appointments, which, by the way, go the minute you try and press, you know, book. And so, I think that's fantastic for the 40-odd% that you mentioned. But I think there's a majority of people in this country who aren't being served properly by their GPs, or in fact, perhaps are just being affected by previous experiences and actually behaving, you know, in a way that sort of results from those experiences, which is not necessarily beneficial to their health.
So, yeah, another thing you mentioned, which probably stems on from what you're talking about, is people believing they've been misdiagnosed, a worrying trend in how public responds to sort of medical uncertainty. And there was a figure on that. I haven't got it in front of me.
I think 32% of people felt that they had been misdiagnosed.
So, I don't come from a medical background, but I can imagine that the diagnosis process, you know, it's uncertain. You know, you go and see a doctor, he doesn't know immediately what's wrong with you. Like if you've got a stomachache, he says, all right, maybe let's check that it's not a digestive issue. So he gives you a dose of salts and you go away, the dose of salts goes through you and it's fixed, or you still got a problem. So you go back. And the doctor then goes, right, okay, it's not a digestive issue. We need to look at something else. So is that a misdiagnosis? It's just part of the process, isn't it?
No, I think what you're talking about is absolutely part of the process. I think, obviously I can't speak for those people who have sort of answered how they've answered, but I suppose, you know, from what I see in my job, you know, there are a lot of occasions where, yes, that person goes and the GP says, oh, it might be a digestive problem. And then there's a few more occasions where they go and the GP says, oh, it's fine, have some more salts or have another round of antibiotics. And this can go on for quite some time. And, you know, I suspect that is the sort of thing that people are talking about, which is that, you know, they're sort of going with a problem, the GP's covering it with a plaster and there's not really any diagnosis going on. And then, you know, in the worst cases that you know, there is a worrying diagnosis at the end of that. You know, it's very difficult to kind of be anything but generic in these situations, but clearly people feel as though they are not, you know, being diagnosed correctly.
So, I mean, if you do go along, you're going to say, oh, we got it wrong. But it's just part of the finding out, the checking process, really. I don't know. Sometimes I think people might be mistaken by that. I don't know.
But it may well be part of the overriding issue, which is just, you know, the lack of trust in the NHS. And you know, with all the sort of recent stories of various things happening and you know, more and more has been coming out over the last few years, you know, I suspect there is perhaps a lot of mistrust, and that is colouring how people are seeing how they're treated by the GP and you know, their diagnosis.
I think you're right. I mean, this thing can result in a bit of a pile on because that, you know, it's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. And there was another statistic. In general, the public perception of the NHS is poor. I go along with that. 40% of patients believe they are substandard, or, you know, treatment they've had is substandard. Now, I don't really like believe. I like facts.
Well, I'm a lawyer. I'll join you there. So do I.
So again, I thought, right, let's look up some facts. But all right, so I had a quick Google. I didn't pore over this, but I found a report from the King's Fund, and just saying just how many people the NHS treats. And the NHS has 2.5 million interactions with patients every 36 hours. You know, that's pretty impressive. I mean, it's a big organisation. It's dealing with a lot of people now.
Yeah.
Whether 40% of those interactions are substandard or wrong, I kind of suspect not. By statistically, some of them will be because there are just so many of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, of course, I unfortunately see the worst interactions in my jobs. So it's very difficult for sort of, I suppose, me to kind of summarize, you know, on that score. Again, I suspect it's very subjective for people. There might have been part of their treatment they weren't happy with, whether it was right or wrong. No one knows. And of course, there is a, you know, there's a small proportion of cases where the treatment is substandard to the point where they have been, you know, subjected to permanent harm, you know, so that's a just sort of different story. But, you know, I think it's all wrapped up in how people see the NHS at the moment. And clearly it's not seen in a very good light for various reasons.
We need to address that. And well, I'll come later on how we can sort things out. But the other thing that kind of alarmed me was this self-diagnosing.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Before we return to Emma Doughty of Slater and Gordon and the discussion about trust in the NHS, please let me remind listeners about the BackApp chair. If you suffer from back pain or poor posture when sitting at your desk, you could try the BackApp chair. It really has helped hundreds of people. Have a look at the website, relaxbackuk.com, to see the BackApp chair, what it can potentially do for you, and to arrange a free trial. Now, back to the chat with Emma.
27% of people say that instead of bothering with a GP, they're self-diagnosed. That's a bit horrifying, isn't it?
That's really worrying, yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, brilliant as Google is, you know, it's no substitute for our learned GPs who spent many years training.
maybe you could turn it around. Is that a good thing? We're all getting a bit more self-reliant. We know the GPs are busy. So if we have a bit of a sore throat, we'll go, oh, I've got a sore throat. Either I'll wait and it'll go away, or I'll go to the pharmacy and ask their advice and sort it out myself.
Yeah, and let's hope it is those people and not people with, you know, sort of underlying health concerns who should actually be speaking to their GP and providing, you know, the symptoms and asking for expert help. But yeah, absolutely. You know, we do need to become a bit more self-reliant, but I think we've got to pick our moments, as it were.
I mean, the statistics for young people getting advice, medical advice, the number of people, young people certainly, that get medical advice from TikTok as opposed to their GP, pretty scary. So maybe you should be knocking on TikTok's door and not knocking on the poor old GP's door.
Maybe. I will stick myself in the older category, someone who doesn't really use TikTok. So I'll not comment further on that.
Something else that I bet you have come across, if you use Twitter, X or Instagram, any of these things, it's absolutely full of kind of people peddling weird and wonderful health cures, conspiracy theorists. And they just seem to get, well, get away with murder, actually. That's a phrase, but they get away with an awful lot. And they suggest people don't bother your GP, don't bother the NHS. It's all rubbish anyway. And they really influence an awful lot of people. That kind of worries me.
Yeah, I mean, and actually there have been some examples, haven't there, over the last few years of people being pulled up on that, thankfully. But as you say, I mean, it is rife over Instagram and Twitter. X.
But do you go after any of them?
We have actually had a few cases, certainly in my lifetime at Slater and Gordon, where people have followed weird and wonderful, advice, which is non-medical. And actually, there have been really severe, and in one case I'm thinking of, fatal consequences. And we have tried to go after those people, but you tend to find that they then disappear. Or don't have the funds with which
they haven't got any money. There's no point going after them, is there? It's a waste of time.
So it's a really, really awful situation.
Whereas the NHS has plenty of money, so you might as well have a go at them. Is that unfair?
Well, I mean, I've got some comments on that, but I think we'll leave that there. Yeah.
So that comment was a little bit tongue-in-cheek and possibly a bit unfair. But I think there is a slightly more serious issue of kicking an organisation when it's down is not necessarily very helpful, is it?
I think the NHS
is having a difficult time at the minute.
Yeah, I think what you're talking about is different from what I do. So that there's absolutely no way that I can sue anybody unless there are grounds to do so. And you know, if somebody has suffered really severe permanent harm as a result of negligence in the NHS, then I would hope that they should be expected to be compensated for that. Now, you know, as in any legal situation, there are legal tests that we must follow. And, you know, at the end of the day, a court will be a judge of whether or not there's an appropriate claim there against the NHS. So there's lots of people who complain about lots of things, and we don't necessarily bring a case for all of those, on behalf of all of those people. So, you know, there are always checks and balances. We are not suing the NHS willy-nilly. It is just about when somebody has suffered harm. And, you know, I have seen the most awful things. And I think if you'd seen them too, you would probably agree with me that those people, it's very acceptable for them to be compensated for those things.
No, I'm sure you have. I'm not suggesting that there should be no compensation whatsoever. However, I did do another little bit of Googling again. I will caveat that this is
you're fulfilling our prophecy here.
Very dangerous thing. But in 2023 to 24, there were 13,784 clinical negligence claims against the NHS. That's one every 40 minutes. So this is a lot. Okay, this is big business. There's a lot here. And out of that lot, apparently, 6,573 were settled without damages. So from a layman's standpoint, it looks like, blimey, half of them are just having a go because they can. They've seen a no win, no fee kind of advert somewhere and thinking, all right, let's have a go. Maybe I'll get some cash.
Yeah, possibly. And that's why if you do think you've got a case, you need to visit specialist clinical negligence solicitors and not, just anybody, because it is a very specialised game. And, it is one where the sort of the very specialist people make sure that they are doing the right thing in the right cases.
So you don't do this no win, no fee thing.
That's how we have to fund the cases. Absolutely. I can speak for my organisation to say that we don't bring cases that don't have any grounds.
Right. Good. I'm glad to hear that, because I saw this statistic and frankly I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand the parameters of the statistic that you found, so it's very difficult for me to make any other comment. Other than that. I don't know what they mean by settle or without damages, or it's I'm being a boring lawyer here, so I probably
Well,
shouldn't
it just
comment
didn't
any
result in
further.
damages, so they didn't get anything. I suppose. Perhaps we should let's because I'm aware that I might have been a bit negative in some of these things. I don't mean to be, because first of all, I love the NHS. I'm a user of the NHS. It's saved my life, saved my wife's life. You know, it is a wonderful thing. But having said that, if things go wrong, they need to be put right. Is there, do you think, a better way? How could things be set up such that when things do go wrong in the NHS, it doesn't result in patients having to get hold of lawyers and then everyone having a big fight and then some people getting money and other people not getting money?
I think you've got to tackle the problem much earlier than getting to the lawyers. I'm with you, Mike. The NHS has been absolutely fantastic to me and my family in many, many ways. I'm not sitting here as somebody who hates the NHS, far from it. But I think that, you know, as somebody who pays their taxes in the same way as you do, what we need is more of those taxes to be invested in the NHS and in the right ways. They need more people. They need more training. They need resource so that they have time to speak to people, to listen to people, to try and diagnose people, to treat them. As I've said before, we're excellent at acute care, but as soon as you move away from that need, it all falls away. There are, you know, from my perspective, there are just huge gaps in the NHS where they just need additional funding. And, you know, I really think it starts with that and not with the lawyers.
I suppose what I was trying to get at, I don't even really know if this is sensible, but there was that massive statistic for the number of the number of times patients are dealt with within the NHS, you know, every 36 hours, millions. So with that number of contacts, some mistakes will happen. Like statistically, it's just going to happen. You know, even if everyone is trained perfectly, you know, there will be mistakes. But I suppose what I was trying to get at in my rather layman, clumsy type way is, could you have like some sort of internal way of sorting out these problems?
I think there is an internal way that, you know, there is a complaints process, and the NHSR have set up various sort of projects, and, you know, my firm works with them on various of those to see if, you know, compromise can be reached in different ways at much earlier points. And, you know, we're absolutely happy to engage in those things. I think personally, the complaints process is also a bit broken within the NHS. I don't think it's transparent. I don't always think that they are done correctly, and it sort of leaves people with a bad taste in their mouth because they feel that they actually their points haven't been dealt with during that complaint process. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, it's, you know, it's just adds to the whole host of problems in the NHS at the moment. And yes, it's an expensive part of what they do is having to respond to complaints, but perhaps if they did it in a much more transparent way, you know, then that might avoid the need for so many people going on to solicitors after that process. I think there's many, many ways that we can, you know, work together with the NHS much more. And as I say, you know, I must say that we and other big clinical negligence firms are working with the NHS to try and do that.
So when you're in charge of everything and you're given the job of right sorting out the NHS, it sounds like you've got some plans to put in motion.
I think I'd run very far from that job, Mike.
And so would I.
Very, very far. Whoever is doing that must have a much larger brain than I. So I'll leave that to them.
And likewise, I'm happy to let other people get on with what they're better at. Good. All right. Look, thank you so much for taking the time to chat, because this is a very important subject. And, you know, I did sort of do a bit of Googling and throw you some awful statistics.
No, absolutely. It's an emotive one. It's really difficult. You know, there are lots of sides to it. And I know it can be a very controversial one.
Yeah. And there will be
people going through this at the moment. So if people are looking for advice on how to deal with the NHS complaints procedure, so things can get done, sorted out, hopefully in a proper way. And then if they think, goodness, I'm not getting help here. And they really think they do have an issue and it's not sort of a spurious complaint. What are some good sources of information where they can get some good, sensible, level-headed advice?
Okay, well, first and foremost, I'd advise people to go onto the AVMA website, accidents. It's an organisation set up to deal with just this type of situation. Giving people access to all sorts of information to help them sort of find an appropriate solicitor, find an accredited firm, and also they have lots of information to help people with sort of their own self-advocacy and advice and reassurance and that kind of thing. So AVMA is brilliant. The Law Society, an association of personal injury lawyers, will also be able to point you in the right direction for, you know, people who are properly accredited to look into clinical negligence claims. And that would be my first port of call.
Excellent. All right. That sounds very useful. So again, thank you very much indeed for taking the time to chat. This is an important topic.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
Thank you very much to my guest this week. That was Emma Doughty of Slater & Gordon talking about trust in the NHS. Thank you to you for listening and have a healthy week until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.